So the ministry I'm a part of in my day job is InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. And this time of year is always a special time of year when all the college students are coming back to campus, and it's usually pretty crazy for us this time of year. So this year's a little toned down because of access and kind of all that kind of stuff. So we're learning how to figure out all this ministry stuff in the midst of COVID, but able to return, but sometimes not, and all these things. But this time of year always reminds me of my first year coming to college. Originally, I was not going to go to college. I'm a drummer, and my brother, older brother, is a guitarist. I was in a band. He's a year older than me, and we lived in Hawaii at the time. And he went to LA a year ahead of me to go to music school, and I was going to go follow him, and then we were going to make it big in LA. But the Lord was kind to me in that senior year of my high school. My faith came alive, and there was one moment where I was out just praying. It was down on the shores of the Pacific Ocean in Hanama Bay, stayed out all night, New Year's, and that morning was praying, and I just sensed the Lord saying, go to college. I hadn't thought about it, so I had like 20 days to do the whole process. My dad was in the Navy, and he thought he'd end up in D.C., so he's like, if you want to look east, west, it doesn't really matter. Either way, we'll be traveling to get you to school. So he was stationed at BIW when I was a kid, and I thought, well, Maine was kind of cool. Maybe I'll check there. And I found three schools that fit the description that my counselor said, since I didn't know what I was going to do. He's like, you need a liberal arts school. I'm like, I'm not liberal. He said, no, it's different than that. Just look them up. So I found Bates and Bowdoin and Colby, made one application, copied it three times, sent it out, never saw the school, never talked to an individual, nothing. And Bates somehow, I think it's because of geographical distribution, accepted me as the only student from Hawaii at Bates in 1985. But my way getting there from, you know, I had a 6,000-mile trip to get to college, and I was nervous and uncertain, but got on the plane, took off. Everything was great until I got to Newark, which, you know, anybody from Newark, sorry about that. Stay in the building. But my flight was delayed getting into Boston, and I knew I was going to miss the next leg. But back then, you know, little information, no phones, no way to figure out, so I just chill, you know. So got on the next plane, made it into Boston, went up to the counter. Now, this was 1985, and there was a little airline in Maine called Bar Harbor Airlines. I don't know if some of you may know. And there was a famous incident on that airline where one of the planes crashed with a woman named Samantha Smith on it, who was, like, making positive ties to Russia during the Cold War. Well, when I got to Boston, I went to find my flight, and they said, oh, I'm sorry, there's no flight. In fact, there was actually no flight because it was that plane that I was booked on, and that plane didn't exist anymore. So I was like, well, how am I going to get up to Maine? And I'm like, well, we'll figure it out, but we can't do that till the morning. So I was planning to stay the night in Logan, settling down for the evening, when somebody walked up to the counter and was just kind of talking story with a person behind there, and he said, I can't wait to get to Lewiston tonight. I'm like, Lewiston? That's where Bates is. So I walked up to the counter. I'm like, are you going to Lewiston, Maine? Yes. So I'm like, can I go with you? So I hopped on his van, and we drove up. His name was Brian, and we drove up together to Maine. I got into Lewiston around 2 in the morning. He was very smart. He went to the nearest Dunkin' Donuts or 7-Eleven, found a policeman. They called the college security. They came and let me into my dorm. And all the rooms were closed, so I slept. My first day in college from 6,000 miles away was sleeping on a couch in the lounge of what I thought might be my dorm. Only to be woken up at 7 in the morning by the custodial staff saying, what are you doing in here? I'm like, I'm sorry. I think I go here. Anyway, eventually, I found my key, got let into college, and called the airport to only find out that they completely lost my luggage. And yet, my attitude in all this, I was a fairly fresh Christian. I'm like, God's got this. I was relaxed, adventurous. I had this sense of what the next thing would bring. It's all right. You know, there was this sense of lightness to my experience. When I read my journal, I'm pretty impressed, because now I think about this fall, and I think about all the uncertainty on campus. I think about all the ways that we're trying to navigate. And I'm like, can we just wait 3 months? right? My attitude is a little different. I'm tired. And we just had our regional conference with all our staff. It was the first time in 2 years we all were together in the same place. And we were excited, but everybody's tired. And I think the uncertainty of all these days, all the kind of tension and turmoil, it's taking a toll on us. And that even though things are opening up and new possibilities are there, there's still a lot of uncertainty, and I think we're kind of tired. It's a little interesting trying to navigate these days. And that's the sermon I want to look at today, is facing uncertainty. And is there a way that we can face it a little bit more like I did, you know, as an incoming freshman in college, with a lightness, a sense of adventure, and a sense of hope that may be a way for us to be a light to the world? To do that, we're going to go back to the time of Jesus and the disciples. After Jesus had died and after he had risen again from the dead, this will be the third time, in the book of John at least, the third time that Jesus appears to his disciples. And it's the story when, if you know this, it's the story of Peter's restoration. But I'm not going to get to that point where Jesus kind of asks Peter if he loves him and restores him. I want to look at just the portion before that in John 21. A little backstory on this. Peter, who shows up prominently in the story, was Jesus' right-hand man. He was one of the first people picked by Jesus in a story very similar to the one we're going to hear today. He was strong, courageous, the first to speak. He was invited into some intimate encounters that Jesus had with different people and ways that Jesus displayed his glory before people even knew who he was. And yet, in the very moment where Peter was really pressed to be the disciple that he should have been, right, the rocky. Peter means rocky. It's like kind of a nickname that Jesus gave him, like that steady, strong person. Right in the moment he needed to be rocky the most, he failed Jesus. In a way, he failed on his watch when Jesus was handed over by his enemies to the Roman machine and put in a process that was irreversible, that he knew he was going to die. The other disciples were no better, in the sense they just scattered and were MIA in the time of Jesus' greatest need. Imagine that. Imagine being with Jesus 3 years, seeing him do all kinds of amazing things. Imagine being really intimate with him, asking him the kind of questions that only a few people could ask. And then when his death was on the line and you had a chance to possibly do something, you just withered and you watched him die. So you can imagine, when he rose from the dead and appeared, there was still this sense of uncertainty. Like, the questions would probably be pretty strong. If I were Peter, I think I'd be thinking things like, this was not the way this was supposed to go. Right? Jesus was supposed to come in and take over Rome and reestablish Israel and be like that David king that we had before. But it didn't happen that way. He rose from the dead, but now it's kind of quiet. Like, he's not like rising up and taking over either. What does this mean? What are we to do? Am I still a disciple, or did I disqualify myself with my actions? So even though he showed up, he hasn't yet made it clear, what's my role? Everything, I think, for them was uncertain. And so this is where we pick up the story. What I'd like to do when I read this is to have you pay attention with all five of your senses, right? So as I read this, think about, if you were in this place, hearing, like actually living this out, what do you see? What do you hear? What do you smell? What do you taste? What am I missing? Touch. Yeah, what do you feel? So put your five senses into this story as I read this. This is John 21. Later, Jesus appeared again to the disciples beside the Sea of Galilee. This is how it happened. Several of the disciples were there: Simon Peter, Thomas, nicknamed the Twin, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, that's James and the author here, John, and two other disciples. Simon Peter said, "I'm going fishing." "We'll come too," they all said. So they went out in the boat, but they caught nothing all night. At dawn, Jesus was standing on the beach, but the disciples couldn't see who he was. He called out, "Fellows, have you caught any fish?" "No," they replied. Then he said, "Throw out your net on the right side of the boat, and you'll get some." So they did, and they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. Then the disciple Jesus loved said to Peter, "It's the Lord." When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his tunic, for he had stripped for work. He jumped into the water and headed to shore. The others stayed with the boat and pulled the loaded net to the shore, for they were only about 100 yards from shore. When they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them, fish cooking over a charcoal fire and some bread. "Bring some of the fish you just caught," Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard and dragged the net to shore. There were 153 large fish, and yet the net hadn't torn. "Now come and have some breakfast," Jesus said. None of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Then Jesus served them the bread and the fish. This was the third time Jesus had appeared to his disciples since he had been raised from the dead. In the story, I think Jesus does three things that may speak to us when we face uncertain times, a little bit like these guys did. And I think, again, in our day, we're facing a lot of uncertainty. The first thing Jesus does is this. He shows up. Jesus shows up in their uncertainty. Peter and his companions decide to go fishing. We don't know entirely why, but John is kind of hinting at something like this. Well, I guess that disciple thing is up in the air now, so might as well go back to what I'm used to. And Peter and John and James were in business before in fishing. And so at least the three of them knew what was going on with fishing, and they went right back to it. And it's right in this place, like the center of Peter's desolation, that Jesus shows up unannounced. It's dawn, so we don't know whether it's the light, like the early light, where you can't quite see and make out details on the shore, so they see a person, they're not sure it's Jesus, or if Jesus is doing one of these post-resurrection Jesus things where people can't recognize him because of how he's very different with his new body. Either way, Jesus is smack in the middle of their experience before they even know he's there. He's entering in to their desolation and their uncertainty without them knowing it fully. I think Jesus does this all the time, right? He shows up where we need him the most, even when we don't recognize him, or even if we don't want to recognize him. What does Jesus do? First thing he does, he illuminates, kind of shines a light on their uncertainty and their desolation, right? "Hey guys, you catch anything?" Right? It's like, you know, for fishermen, that's like a jab, right? Here's three professional guys out all night, catch nothing, this stranger on the shore, catch anything, right? We need to remember, though, when Peter was first called, Luke 5, 1 through 11 details this story, this same, almost exact situation happened. He was out all night, he didn't catch anything, he comes in, Jesus is teaching on the beach, he asks to get into the boat before they know who he is. It's the same idea. This time he's on the shore, a little bit cloaked. He asks them to do something. They do it, and both times the result is a miraculous catch. What's happening inside Peter, I'm sure, is that his heartstrings are getting tugged. Like he needs John to tell him it's the Lord, but he knows what's going on. The only person that he ever knew in his entire life that could do something like this was the man who changed his life and who he failed. And now he's coming back and he's doing it again. He's pulling right in the middle of that place of deep uncertainty. Jesus is so compassionate. Even when it hurts us in that way, he's after us because he wants our heart. And that's what he does. When we need him in our uncertainty, Jesus wants to show up to that vulnerable place in us. He's not willing just to change our exterior circumstance. He wants to change us from the inside out. And that's what he's doing here with Peter. What's interesting is with Peter, much like us, where he's going to is a place of control. Right? When we feel uncertain or out of sorts, what we want to do is find something at least that we can control. And that's what Peter's doing. By going fishing, he's at least doing something that he knows. And yet what Jesus is doing is pulling him out of that place right into the heart of where he's the most out of control and actually experiences the most shame. And he wants to deal with him there. The first thing Jesus does is he shows up. One of my friends, her name is Theta, and she works with a foundation through Chick-fil-A called Windshape, and she helps start their retreat center that they've done an amazing amount of ministry through the years. It's down in Georgia. And when COVID hit, she was kind of the chief of hospitality for this place, and they have hundreds and hundreds of people that come through. And so when COVID hit, they had a mask requirement, so she put on the mask, but she hated it. She hated the rule, and she hated wearing the mask, mainly because she just, the face expresses so much when you first meet somebody, a stranger. And to only see the eyes and to be hindered like that, she just was frustrated. And she was getting more and more angry and wanted to take control. And at times, she was just wanted to rip the thing off and do what she wanted to do. And then one night, she had a dream. And in that dream, Jesus showed up to her very vividly. And what he said to her was this: Theta, I, the eternal God, put on flesh for you. Would you please put on a mask for your guests? She woke up and was like, okay. She put the thing on, smiled, and for the next months and months, she was like, you know what? The Lord gave me joy to welcome people, even with that mask on, even though I still didn't like it. He changed me from the inside out because he showed up right where I was uncertain. How can we let go of that control that we want to take in these times of uncertainty and fix our attention on Jesus instead and let him come into those places and set us free a little bit? I think if that happens, man, the kind of witness that we can really be amazing. Jesus shows up. The second thing Jesus does here is he provides. Jesus provides. It's interesting. He doesn't show up with kind of bright lights and, doing amazing things. He does an amazing miracle, but it's really a personal one for Peter, James, John, and the other disciples. But what he does is he actually does the very thing that they just failed to do all night. Because while he's asking them to throw the net on the other side, he already on the beach has fish cooking and some bread. He has enough for all of them. He doesn't need any fish that they are catching, and yet he still asks them to do it and to bring it up to shore. And even when his breakfast is almost fully cooked, he asks them, and Peter gets it, to bring up what they've caught. What a great picture of how Jesus provides, right? He includes us. Even in the midst of our uncertainty, he wants us to bring what we can, what we're actually able to do, and yet he's already provided everything else. There's a great freedom in that. When we think of the ministry of the church in these days, there's a way that we can feel like we're chained, right? Man, it's just hard to gather people. We can't do everything we used to be able to do. I think the question to ask in this time is, well, what can we do? And how can we do that and then trust that Jesus has actually done everything else fully and completely, but now we get to be involved in it and watch what Jesus does? I think from what I hear of you as a church and know of you, you're doing that already. And I just want to encourage you, keep it up. Find those ways to do the things that you can do and watch what Jesus does with that. What Jesus is also doing here, though, is not just the externals. He's actually trying to get Peter to bring what Peter can from inside. Right? I think that's why Peter does it. He's the guy to go and get the fish when Jesus says, bring some of those up. He runs, he gets the net, and he pulls 153 heavy, big fish up to the shore. You feel the adrenaline going inside this guy. Why? Because he wants to bring something to Jesus after he's failed him. Just something. And Jesus accepts it. He doesn't reject it. He accepts it. Jesus doesn't need Peter to do what Jesus has already done. And yet, He wants to involve Peter right at the heart, right at the heart of what he's going to do. And we see later that Peter does end up in that position to be the leader of the fresh, growing church after Jesus leaves. I don't know about you, but this whole season, but especially this last summer, I don't know if it's because things kind of opened up, so expectations changed, but my internal relationship to God and my rhythms and just kind of normal way of going, it just got thrown off. I felt like, who am I? What am I doing? And how do I relate to you, God? Right? And I think my job, right, is to care for the spiritual well-being of missionaries. And here I am, like, kind of suffering too. It's one of those times in ministry where it's always hard, right? When you're struggling inside, how do you give to others? And I've felt that lately. But it's an interesting place. I noticed in talking to most of the staff that I work with, they're all feeling something similar. We're all kind of thrown off our A game, right? There's a lot that we're used to that we're just not able to kind of get back in the rhythms of. And in those kind of places, those internal places where we feel uncertain, how can we bring that to Jesus? Much like Peter brought the fish as a kind of a picture of his internal state. How can we bring that to Jesus and see him do the things that only he can do? I'd really encourage you to do that if you haven't lately. Is just bring your honest self to him and see what he can do. So Jesus shows up. Jesus provides. And then the last thing Jesus does, I think, is just remarkable. He invites them to come and have breakfast. Think about this. The person of Jesus, like we can see this now 2,000 years later, like if you pull back the curtain and see who this guy is on the beach that they're about to have breakfast with, he was the Lord who created the heavens and the earth. He took on humanity in the flesh, grew up from infancy up to age 30, entered into ministry for 3 years, absolutely transformed the culture he was in by the miracles and the teaching that he did, bringing to light the very heart of God's message and truth and interaction with people that he wanted to have forever. In doing that, he put himself against all the powers that wanted to keep the status quo, and he knew it and willingly went into the midst of that, which led him to his death. But that death wasn't accidental, it was on purpose. It was for the forgiveness and atonement for all of the sins, for all of humanity. Because of that, and he was perfect, God raised him from the dead, the first person ever and since to have that experience. And now he reigns. He ascends up to the heaven, reigns with God, and one day he'll come back and judge the earth and set everything right. This is that man on the beach who's making breakfast for them. He could emphasize at this point this grand mission that he's on. But what does he do? Come, please have breakfast with me. The one thing Jesus wants from his failed disciples, who failed in the moment of absolute need, in the midst of all the mission that he could be about, is to be with them and eat. That's the heart of God. He wants to have breakfast with us. Think about breakfast in your home, right? It's the messiest, most intimate meal, right? Dinner you can kind of put together. But breakfast, you're all kind of disheveled, you know? Like you just grab and go. And that's where people who really know each other eat together. And that's what Jesus wants with his disciples. He just wants to be with them. Wherever you're coming from this morning, if you feel disheveled, if you feel like you've failed Jesus, if you've never met Jesus before and these are new words to you and you wonder what it's like to even have a relationship with him, I want you to hear this. Jesus' first and foremost mission above everything else in the universe is he wants to be with you, and he's made the way possible for that to happen. No failure, no disorientation, no uncertainty, nothing in your life can keep him from coming to you and saying, I just want to be with you. That's the biggest message I think we have. There's no love like that on this earth. We can come close, but we still fall short. The love of Jesus to us is the one that he just wants us to come and sit down, eat what he's provided. even if it's awkward. I imagine being Peter at this point. You brought the fish up, come and have breakfast, right? And you sit down and it's like, you want one filet or two, Peter? Like, what do you talk about with this Jesus that you failed? He doesn't care. He doesn't care. He knows they're all saying, we're not going to ask him who he is because we know who he is. He knows all that awkwardness is going on. He doesn't care. He serves them breakfast, and I love it. I think that's the thing I forget the most with Jesus, is that he just wants to be with us. I feel like I'm always thinking about what I'm doing as the measure of whether or not I can be with Jesus. That's just, it's just inside of us. It's our pride. When God's like, no, I've already known you've just blown it. I just want to be with you and save you and bring you home. And he will. One day, if we attach ourselves to him, if we believe in him, he promises that one day he'll give us eternal life. One way you can develop this that I think is a helpful way, it's been helpful for me when I've done it, is at the end of the day, just take a few minutes and reflect back on your day with Jesus. Almost like looking back through a photo album of your day, you know, with Jesus, or flipping through your phone on some pictures that you've taken, both of kind of what's going on in you and outside of you. What were some highlights from your day? What were some lowlights from your day? And without shame, without judging or anything, just share those with him. And then hit the pause button on your talking or thinking and listen. And this might be a little challenging, but when you listen, I want you to actually listen for the words of Jesus to you about your day. And you may get it right sometimes. It might actually be you captured what Jesus actually wanted to say to you. Other days you may not, but that's what any relationship is like. Think of it as wanting to get in touch with Jesus in a way where you actually know each other's voice really, really well. And that takes listening. And see what Jesus says to you. Jot it down in a journal and do that over time and see if any patterns emerge, or see if you can fine-tune your way of listening. But what I found in doing this is that the voice of Jesus starts to come more clearly to me, that then during the day I can hear it and it can help me adjust to being with him during the day. One final illustration to close. Lisa, my wife, and I, when we got married in 1994, we were given this plant, and it's like a plant, I'll just call it. I don't even know what kind it is after 20-something years. But when my son Miles, just a few years ago, had a pair of scissors, he decided to give it a haircut, you know, so snip, snip, snip. So it was like all the stumps were just gone, except like one or two little ones and these little leaves, you know. So we watered it and stuff, and it started to grow a little bit. And then about a year and a half ago, we got a dog. And so we decided, let's get that plant out of the way. So we moved it up to the top of the stairs. And almost all our other plants are downstairs. So in watering, we'd water those, and then we'd forget that one from time to time. But then we'd remember and go up and water it. Well, this spring, we noticed, I mean, the leaves were like, you know, just starting to do this, right? We're like, oh no, maybe this is finally done. And Lisa and I started getting nervous about our relationship. No, just kidding. We didn't. So I'm like, well, I looked at the soil and there was water. I mean, it was wet, and I kind of dug down in and it was just bone dry, like less than an inch below. So I started realizing, well, maybe we were just watering the surface. So I took it outside, just took the hose and just doused the thing, you know, complete until it was flowing over the top, and then let it drain out, brought it back in, and wouldn't you know, the roots were just not getting any water. The water that it was getting was just too shallow, and it started to grow, and now it's this beautiful plant in our room again, and our marriage is saved. So, but maybe you feel like that plant. I know I do, right? What Jesus does here in showing up, in providing, and in having breakfast is a lot like what I did with that plant. When we're in uncertain times, we can end up just kind of holding off and just like a skipping stone. Just, we don't go deep, but we just kind of make it through one thing after another. And after a while, we start to wilt a little bit. And I think that's what I'm feeling. And I wonder if you are too. I know my staff are. What we're longing for is that deep, 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 restful drink of water from Jesus that will go down to those places that then start to create the life in us that is natural and organic, and then we begin to be that witness that we long to be with our family, with our friends, with our neighbors, and with the world. What a breath of fresh air it would be if we let Jesus show up, provide, and have breakfast with us to go that deep with us. And that's my prayer for you and for all of us in these uncertain times, that he would water us deeply. Let's pray together. Father, in our uncertainty, may we see your Son Jesus, who with the power to fill our nets wants to eat with us and share his life with us. Fill us deeply with your refreshing water and nourishing food, so we may live certain of your love, with trust and adventure for the days ahead, and with a growing love for those around us. Amen.